Blossom Leilani Crawford was originally trained in Pilates by Kathy Grant, who was one of Joseph Pilates' original students, and she's also been certified by Romana Krasnowska. She currently is the principal at Bridge Pilates in New York, and in our conversation, we cover a lot of ground, including some historical perspectives from her time with both Kathy Grant and Romana, and her insights into the evolution of Pilates. We end on a really hopeful note, and I think a really inspiring and important one, which is the idea of what we do is not rocket science, and we can really make a big difference for people by empowering them and just getting them moving fearlessly. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Blossom Leilani Crawford. Okay, Blossom, thanks so much for talking with me. I'm thrilled to have you here.
I'm so excited to do this.
So for somebody who is really new to Pilates and maybe starting out on their journey, can you just give us a brief history of, you know, where you kind of came to Pilates and how you, where you sit in the Pilates universe?
I like that, the Pilates universe. I would say probably my first sort of claim to any sort of Pilates universe or my out there in the world is mainly through Kathy Grant. She happened to be my first Pilates teacher, and I ended up being a major assistant of hers, especially at the end of toward the last 17 years of her life. And then I'm also certified by Romana, and now I teach continuing education workshops to Pilates teachers all over the U.S. and all over the world now. So I think that's it. Yeah, that's my place in the Pilates universe, I think.
Wow, that was an amazingly concise summary of a huge number of
years. That was pretty good, right? I know. I mean, I can elaborate a lot, but that's the general overview.
Okay, and just for for those who are really sort of just coming to Pilates fresh, like, who was Kathy Grant?
Oh, okay. Well, Kathy Grant is considered, which I always think is hilarious, and Kathy did too. She is considered a Pilates elder. So back in the, quote, dark ages, when people had no idea what it was, and when there were only a few people out there that even studied with Mr. Pilates, Kathy was one of the few. And she lived in New York. She went to Mr. Pilates as an injured dancer. And she was one of the few people who actually got like a certification from him, which is also interesting. So that's Kathy Grant. I mean, and as I get older and sort of learn more about her, what's fascinating about Kathy is that she had this whole other life of just being an incredible dancer and an incredible arts administrator. So the part that most people know about Kathy, I think, now is more as a Pilates elder. But now, I mean, she sort of had this incredible life.
Okay, and you spent 13 or 17 years working with
years. Yeah. I met her in September of 1993 was when I became, is that correct? Yeah. Yes. September of 93, I moved from Hawaii to New York, and I went to school at New York University Tisch School of the Arts. And I was a young wannabe professional dancer and taking what was called floor bar class at NYU was a part of my training. And it was a class that Kathy inherited, which was called floor bar, but she really just taught Pilates.
Right. And so she was teaching, must have been a mat work sequence.
Correct. She was teaching mat work. And this is at a time when Pilates was not very well known. And so she was sort of riffing things in the studio that worked for her. And in that time that she worked before Pilates became popular, she kind of started creating of what she ended up calling before the hundreds work that the dancers were supposed to do before they started doing the actual hundreds, and then it would flow into traditional Pilates mat work.
Right. And is that a lot of that stuff that I've seen you doing on Pilates Anytime, like kind of the footwork stuff that you do and breath connection and, you know,
yes.
That kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the cats are a part of Before the 100. You know, Kathy made up like 10 cat exercises, the breathing. I mean, I teach hours. I could teach 10 hours on the Before the 100. And I wish I was joking. Yeah. And be like, okay, let's go. But yeah, so that's, and it was kind of great. It's quirky, it's fun. And, the Before the 100 stuff is kind of some of my favorite work, because it was supposed to be a time for you to sort of feel your body and see what was going on, yet move and strengthen. So it's really wonderful work.
Right. And I've seen the classes that I've seen of yours, which are quite a few on Pilates Anytime, and also on, I think I've seen a couple on Pilatesology as well. Do you have stuff on Pilatesology? Yep. Or have I just misremembered that?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. There really is that strong element of connection with breath and, you know, body awareness and thoughtfulness in the way that you teach. But there's also this real sort of vigorous aspect to the way you teach as well. So you kind of blend. It's certainly not one of those kind of lie on your back and breathe, you know, for an hour sort of experiences. Correct. Yeah. So tell me about how you kind of integrate those two elements.
I mean, so I think it's definitely a bit of the Kathy training that I have. Kathy would say, the problem with Pilates these days is that it's, and this is sort of, you have to think like, you know, Pilates is just becoming popular. It was like the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And she's like, the problem with Pilates is that it's too much like fast food. You know, and what she meant was like, it's like, you know, one size fits all, anybody can enjoy this and it's great. And she'd say good Pilates is a little bit of that and a little bit of what she also said, that the other trouble with Pilates, she would say, is it's too much Billy Graham. Billy Graham was that big preacher back in like, I think the 60s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where it's like, I think we would say now like too much navel gazing and like lying on the floor and feeling your body.
Right.
And Kathy, good Pilates is a balance of those two things. Mm-hmm. And my training with Kathy is, I think you try to find those moments of connection and quiet and then move and connect, you know, and you sort of ebb and flow that way. And I think that's the way Kathy taught. And that is definitely what I like. And that's kind of how I like to work out as well myself.
And so there is a real strong element of ebb and flow. I think that's a great way of putting it within your work, because there's a lot of you work a lot very rhythmically, and I imagine that comes from your dance background. But so you have this very much you know, work very slowly, very mindfully, and there's a lot of pauses.
Yes.
And then there's like, okay, now let's move.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, is that something that came from Kathy, or have you enhanced or added to that, or, you know, tell me about where that comes from.
I would definitely say it came from Kathy. I actually think that Kathy once observed me teach a mat class, and it was not easy for Kathy to do this, but she kept her mouth shut the whole time. And she said, you know, she sort of complimented me. I don't remember the compliment. Of course, all I remember is the quote, bad thing she said. She didn't really say something bad, but she said, you take a few more pauses and stretches than I do. And I went, yeah, I definitely do. And, but yeah, so that definitely comes from Kathy. And I think I might have I like to throw in a couple, stretches here and there, especially in my mat classes that I just teach, weekly at the Mark Morris Dance Center. But yeah, I think that's my Kathy training. And also I love the rhythm, and I think changing up the rhythm is good on our brains and our bodies. And also for me, I think that's my challenge now, is because I think I've been teaching things, you know, you get used to a certain way, and it's good to make, even as a teacher, like, okay, let me slow this down where I usually go fast, or let me go fast where I usually go slow. And I feel like that's what a good teacher does, is mixes it up and keeps it interesting. And I think that my students, my clients will keep listening, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about that a little bit more for a second, because how I spend my time is we train people to teach Pilates. And one of the things that people, you know, we teach the original mat work sequence, the original reformer sequence.
Yep.
And one of the things that people, but, you know, one of the biggest kind of trends in Pilates at the moment in Australia, and I think in America as well, is the rise of the kind of group reformer fitness Pilates franchise. And so if you want to be employable in Australia, like, you have to have the skills of being able to teach a group reformer class. And in Australia, that's done, like, it's very rarely that the sort of the original exercises are in there. Like, you won't see tree or, you know, any of those kind of slightly more complicated ones. It's, there's a lot of planks and lunges and fitness type movements, which is not a bad thing in my view. I think it's a great thing that people are getting on reformers and introduced to the method. But I guess what I want to get to is, students feel like there's this real pressure on them to be creative and come up with constant variety. And something I love about your work is you deliver that in spades, but you do it sort of within the context of the original work. And so how do you strike that, you know, right chord of variety plus consistency, or, you know, integrity? I'm not sure how you want to phrase it.
First of all, I just want to say it makes me very happy that you actually notice that that's what I'm doing, because that is definitely exactly what I'm trying to do. And you know how you sometimes think, like, I hope people realize what I'm doing, you know, but that is exactly what I do. I think it's my training, Rafi. Do you know what I mean? I think my training is classical Pilates, but I also am a Pilates teacher for a long time, and I kind of get bored. But for me, the classical Pilates, like, order is definitely my structure I play with. And I, as much as I like to riff or break the rules, I kind of need to know where the structure is at all times. Does that make sense?
Mm. So if we want to continue the musical metaphor, you like to riff, but you need to know your scales first.
Yeah. I as much as I want, like, if I'm going to mix up the letter, if I want to eat alphabet soup, great, but I still need to know the alphabet, like, from A right. to Z. So I can't help myself that way. As much as I can't help myself to bend the rules and play within it, I kind of still like to keep to some sort of order, even if I know, okay, today I'm throwing the order out and I'm just going to look at this and try to teach this from with this idea in mind. In fact, actually, I'm doing that on a workshop that I'm actually bringing to Australia soon. I'm sort of doing this whole thing on the reformer with the idea of talking about the foot. It's funny, even when I organize the exercises, I'm going, like, okay, so in the order, this one comes first, so I'm going to do this one first. Like, that's kind of, and it's funny because even though it's not necessary because I'm messing with the order completely, I'm still doing it in whatever order it would come in traditionally. Mm. Anyway, but
just,
yeah.
It's just kind of ingrained in you.
It's ingrained in me, but also I feel like, yes, I sort of need to know where my beginning, middle, and end is. And also I think I like the context of the traditional, if that makes sense. Yeah. Cause I also feel like sometimes it becomes too unrecognizable. And if I can't relate it back to something, then I don't understand its purpose.
Mm-hmm. And so what's
go ahead.
So what's your approach to riffing? You know, how do you, you know, I imagine for you now, you've been doing it for so long, it's kind of second nature, but if you were to try and kind of pick apart your process a little bit so that somebody struggling with creativity and finding a balance of creativity and integrity, you know, how would you advise someone, or what's your process for doing that?
This is not going to be a very popular thing to say, but so I found that, like, when Pilates Anytime or Pilatesology came out, I played around a little bit and watched a lot of different things. And then I found that when I went into the studio, I would play with all these different things, but then I found it was almost too many things. And I said to a friend of mine, I said, you know, I feel like I don't know who I am anymore. So I think what I'm trying to say is, what I do now is I watch things, but I don't watch too many at the same time. And I kind of, you know, like, something will come up, I'll be like, oh, that's interesting. And then I'll try it and I'll, you know, on myself and on a client, and I'll go, huh, that seems to highlight the connection to their heels. That's interesting. And so I think it's a combination of just, like, keeping my eyes open and sort of looking. And because, you know, I'll see something on Instagram or on YouTube and I'll be like, huh, I've never seen that before. that could be interesting. And usually that's like a, that's one of my, that's kind of like the first little like ding, like little light bulb moment. And then I think the second, third, fourth, fifth light bulbs are those moments where you're in the studio and you go, huh, I bet that person, you know what, that person could actually use that weird thing I saw, or, you know, I think the concept that that person was working on was this. And that really helps when I'm trying to keep someone from moving into hypermobility. I know it's just sort of, I kind of think of it as like a layering process. So I think it's part keeping your eyes open for things that are interesting to you visually, and you know, on, but also not watching too much. And then on top of it, seeing how that plays out in the studio and developing this idea or trying to understand the reason for whatever movement that you, that, that new thing that you're playing with, and how that develops in the studio. And usually I kind of sort of, I call it like a line of inquiry. Cause then what usually happens is if there's a good idea or concept within a movement that you see, it's probably going to come up in other places, right? Like it kind of goes down the line. You're like, oh, here it is again. So to keep you from that hypermobile spot, let's do that thing again, but let's do it in this position. Or, mm-hmm. or you know, hey, remember, does that make sense?
Yeah. And there's a theme there of limiting your exposure to inspiration, yes. because too much inspiration can be overwhelming.
Right. And also I think part of it too, is you need to know, like for me, I need to know what it like a specific idea has to be sparked. Mm-hmm. And then I think then you take that spark and you work it in the studio, you work it within your clients. And if it's a good thing, then it stays in your repertory and it somehow can infilter into all the stuff that you do all the time.
Mm-hmm. So it's a more, so, it's filtering in, you know, only, you know, things that really speak to you, and then sort of working those through with your own body or with clients, and sort of feeling what sticks essentially.
Yes. And there we go again, where I kind of just layer it onto the traditional stuff that I'm always, that I'm kind of usually doing.
So can you tell me a little bit about, cause I know that you're, you know, you have a real close relationship with the mat work in particular, or that's my impression from what I've seen. Although, you know, obviously, at Bridge Pilates, your studio in Brooklyn, you'd have, you know, the full equipment, and you'd I've seen you teach on all the equipment. But your first introduction was through mat work. I know you teach a weekly mat work class and have done for more than a decade, I believe.
I think I'm at 16 years. Right. Isn't that crazy? That's just my own mat class. That doesn't include the 10 years I did with Kathy. I assisted her class at NYU for 10 years and then like another three of being her student. So that's a lot of mat work.
So where do you feel that the mat work sits within the broader method? And is there a best order for people to learn them? You know, should people start with the mat work? Because I know that when you went to Ramana's, you started on the reform and that was a bit of a shock for you.
Yeah, well, new clients would come in and use their former. It was a bit of a shock. I mean, to me, the greatest thing about mat work is that you don't need anything. I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of props, and you know I love my props, but mat work to me is the key. It's the same exercise as just suddenly on a piece of equipment. You know, it's really the same. So, I mean, I think the thing with the world has changed since then. You know, people like to pay money and feel like they get a thing. And the thing is usually here. Now you can push these springs on this reformer. Does that, you know? So I think that's why the world has changed. Like, you know, people don't want to spend X amount of dollars and get given a towel and a metal pole and, you know, like, and a strap. Like, they're not interested in that. They want to pay money and get something. And I think that's why there's this popularity of reformer classes. And you know, let's face it, reformers are fun, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, springs and things are fun, and you feel like you've learned this thing on this cool piece of equipment. Mat work is just you and your body weight and trying to, you know, it's not so fun. But all the secrets, so to speak, or the strengthening is all in the mat work. It's all in there. So mat work is my very happy place.
So would you agree that the mat work is like a microcosm of the complete method, or is like a not what's the word I'm looking for. It's like
it's Rosetta Stone.
Yeah.
Like it's I mean, I think it is. I have this client, and he learned about Pilates as a very poor college student, and he has only done maybe now he's up to like 8 years of just mat work, because that's really all he could afford. Every now and again, he comes and does an equipment class with me, and let me tell you, he is strong. You know, there is something to like learning how, you know, the push pull of the machines, but for the most part, he is strong, and it's because he does mat work.
You came to Pilates originally because you had injured your back dancing.
Yes.
And you couldn't extend.
No.
And now I've heard you say a few times in different interviews that you know extension is one of your favorite things. And I've seen your Swan tutorials on Pilates Anytime, and yeah, so tell me about your journey from feeling, you know, afraid of extension to now, you know, truly embracing it.
Okay, well, so I should qualify this. Extension is one of my favorite challenging things. I still prefer flexion. I'm better at flexion than my spine. Well, I'm still getting older. My flexion is not as great as it used to be either. But extension is, I think, one of my favorite things to keep challenging myself with. And I think as a young dancer, you think that you can do anything, and you kind of can. And then I hurt myself, and then I went to college at NYU, and I was like, I wasn't able to do a simple back, like a cambre, as they call it in dance, you know, just that a little lean back. And Kathy really pulled me back from that ledge of just like, when I first hurt my back and couldn't quite do that, it's just fear. You know, you start to go back and you just feel pain. Yeah. And I think there was this long journey of finding abdominal muscle my back for the first time. And that's what, and I think what one of my favorite memories of Kathy teaching me is I was in a Swan, and I remember looking at her, and she'd stand right in front of me while I was going into Swan, and she'd say, "You've got more there." And I'd go back a little bit more, and she'd go, "No, you have more there." It was sort of one of those moments where you're like, if she thinks I can do it, I think I can do it. And you know, that's a beautiful moment, right? When because Kathy was not a liar. You know, when she stood in front of you and said this, you know, you can go, you've got more, you actually felt, she put me in a place where I felt safe enough to go, okay, she thinks I can go there, I think I can go there too. And then, and then it's amazing. Now I actually understand what it means for your, you know, belly to support your spine. And I think, you know, it's something that I definitely enjoy now. And Swan on the reformer is fun. I'm not afraid of it anymore. I used to be really afraid of it. And I think that's been my journey is, you know, from fear to no fear. And that's huge.
And how do you now apply that with your clients, you know, whether in extension or any other movement that people have fear about?
I try to show them different ways of extending or doing that movement that they're afraid of. And actually I get this a lot where people are told, "Ooh, you know, you shouldn't do extension, or your right glute isn't working." It's like, well, you did walk here to get here, so it has to be doing something. You know what I mean? So I think that's where I see it a lot. And I try to, it's a little psychological. I try to not get into the head game of it, because there is a head game of like, I've been told not to do X and I don't want to do X. And I sort of get them to do not maybe the biggest movement, but just find those moments where like, oh, look, your right glute is firing. And if you just sort of, I try to get away from talking muscles, like, okay, get that glute to fire, as opposed to, okay, push off the ground, stand tall. Like, I try to use words like that. Does that make sense? As opposed to fire that glute. And it's like, nope, just stand up tall. Just feel, you know, push down into the ground and stand up tall. Because I do believe that just normal human function, you know, like bending down to sit on the toilet, coming up to standing, that you can improve that and just get it better by just sort of, and the muscles will work if you can just concentrate on simple directives as opposed to, you know, fire up that glute. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you've learned extensively from two first generation Pilates teachers, Romana Krasnowska and Kathy. And now I believe you're also working with Deborah Lesson.
I am.
So too much Pilates elders is not enough.
It's taken me a while to get comfortable with that. Let's put it that way.
Well, I wonder, I mean, you've learned from now three people who are taught directly by Joseph Pilates, and each of whom have added their own interpretations and personality yep. to the method. So what insights have you gained as to, you know, which bits came from Joseph himself and which, you know, like how's the tapestry been woven?
That's a good question. Okay, let me start by saying I would definitely say I'm extensively trained by Kathy. I definitely did a huge training with Romana, but it was nothing compared to what I did with Kathy, if that makes sense.
You worked with Romana a couple of years in the late 90s, right?
Yes, and even early 2000. And my training was really, you know, there were different ways you could get certified, and I pretty much, if you had done like lots and lots of prerequisite hours, all of your training could be done watching, you know, at Drago's gym, watching Romana. And that's the training that I did. So, you know, other people who went through that studio, they learned from Bob or Michael and Tone. And I was pretty much just in Drago's gym observing Romana. And so even though I wasn't a lot, it was definitely, you know, a lot of me watching Romana and Shari, like, and being in that studio. Mm-hmm. I think my big takeaway that I, as you say, the tapestry that's been woven is the way I see into all these different sort of lineages is looking at who these people are, like seeing that Romana was a ballet dancer, you know, and seeing how Kathy was she was an anything dancer. She could tap, she, you know, like, and also like seeing who Kathy was, I feel like the context that each of these people did the work and learned the work affected it down the line. So like, you know, Carolla was really big into feet, right? Do you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So Carolla, like one of your first sessions with Carolla, she would make you hold a pencil in your foot and write your name. Right. And by the way, it was right foot and left foot. and you see that influence in Deborah's work and when she teaches, and, you know, and it's now also been filtered in with what Deborah Lesson does, but you see this huge foot influence. And I feel like I'm learning about my foot in a new way that's just being layered on top of what I learned from Kathy and Romana. Mm-hmm. For Romana, the flow and the moving from one movement, one exercise to the other, you know, that was, I feel like that's one of the great contributions that she had to the method. And I sort of like to, you know, that's sort of another thing that I try to do. It's like, oh, so I'm already in this position. What else can I do while I'm here? You know, as I'm sort of maybe making up something new or playing with something or trying to flow from one exercise to the other, you know, less moving around and more like, okay, so let's try to find another thing that we can do while we're here. And with Kathy, I mean, I think for Kathy, it's sort of like those, her quick analysis that she could do and like a quick cue that she can give. And that's sort of what I think is one of her brilliant things. And just maybe she had these little, intersection or these little inserts that she would do in the work. And I try to do that myself. So I think that's the tapestry that's been woven for me. But for me, it all comes to seeing how, maybe trying to understand how each of these elders, what attracted each of them to the work and what they sort of developed in the work themselves. Does that make sense? Mm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And can you then kind of use that understanding that you have of each of these people's kind of cultural context and personal context, and can you kind of use that to, I don't know, flip the picture into a negative and see, okay, what were the Josephisms that were common between all of those?
Yeah, threads? Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I find it so fascinating when people say, you know, the method as Joe intended it, and or, you know, this is, you know, and I always was sort of like, how do you know? How did you know that that's what Mr. Pilates wanted or did? I find that fascinating. And you know, I don't, you know, the clue, I feel like I don't really know what Mr. Pilates would have wanted in so many ways. And so, but the one thing that I find interesting is like, you know, like in mat work, after you're done doing the saw, swan is next, right? And I find it really interesting that Romana did something that she called the neck roll. Mm-hmm. And then Kathy did a different kind of warm-up exercise. Like that to me is an interesting like Joe-ism intersecting with Romana and Kathy, and that they both intersected at the same moment, right? So Romana and Kathy both know, okay, so after saw, Mr. Pilates wanted swan neck, so which is a big extension, which I think most people aren't ready for in our modern age, right? And so Romana does the neck roll to warm up the neck. Kathy did her, it's a hilariously named exercise. Kathy did number 14 head only.
Yeah, I've seen
and
that.
Those, yeah, yeah, that little intersection, right? That little intersection to warm you up before you went into those big. Actually, Kathy even then put the swan later, but like that to me is a Joe-ism that I can sort of grasp onto because I know the order that he sort of at least published once. And so maybe that's what he wanted once. So that's what I think of as a Joe-ism. Cause honestly, I don't really know who he is. And I never, you know what I mean? Like, not intimately like I knew Kathy. So I can't really speak for him other than the orders of the exercises and the equipment that he built. Mm. That's all I know.
Do you have
for
any,
sure.
Do you have any sense of, and I know that you've never, obviously you never worked directly with Joseph Pilates, but do you have any sense of like how his interpretation or teaching might have changed over the years and that, you know, as he taught different students, maybe they received a different kind of.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's no, I just can't, I mean, I just can't imagine that he taught everyone exactly the same way and the exact same things. I don't do that. I don't, does anybody? I just can't imagine that. I mean, I do agree with people when they say that, you know, it would have changed, but you know, I have these old pictures that Kathy used to have on her walls at NYU, and it's the order of the reformer exercises. Right. And at the very end of these, like, you know, methodically laid out pictures are all these funky, weird exercises that where people come over to my studio. They're like, what is that? And I'm like, yeah, that's called the neck and spine pull. And, you know, but you sort of like, I haven't seen that. Nobody really does that. And so you have to, it's sort of like, you know how you have those exercises that you're playing around with and you're like, oh, that seemed to work. I kind of did that for a few months and then it kind of went away. I mean, I'm sure that there's got to be some of those exercises that Mr. Pilates had that maybe he photographed at that time and that was in the order. And then he was like, oh, you know, I don't like that anymore. And maybe would have thrown it out should he have kept going.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I've
spoken with Benjamin Degenhardt and he talked about some archival footage or photographs that he'd found that mm-hmm. sort of listed a bunch of exercises that were basically not widely known. Yeah. So not sort of officially part of the method. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think there's another person who says that like the elephant never, like Mr. Pilates never did an elephant. And so, and that you won't find picture. I don't know proof of this, but he was like, yeah, there, you'll never see a picture from Mr. Pilates of someone doing the elephant. And I'm like, oh, really? Huh. That's interesting. Elephant from.
Now, in terms of your own evolution, can you tell me about how your teaching has evolved or how your focus has evolved over the last, I guess it's over 20 years now that you've been, or around coming up for 20 years since you were certified by Romana.
Yep.
So, you know, how have you evolved, and what's your current focus?
I think what I'm most inspired by now is this work that I've been doing with my PT friend, Marshall Hagens. A lot of the research out there in the sort of physical therapy world is on the spine and the coronal plane. And through sort of a little bit of his work with and some stuff we've been doing, we've been playing around with them. And I just find that for instance, the spine and the sagittal plane, as we all know, there are these patterns, like, you know, if some people have kyphosis or lordosis, and we know those patterns, and we even have names for them. But those same kind of tendencies of, you know, maybe side bending on the thorax to the right or the left exist in the coronal plane, which I just find fascinating. And the fact that people aren't really talking about it or looking at that as much is really interesting to me. But I have found that the work that I've been doing with Marshall Hagens in the coronal plane has really informed my teaching lately. Yeah. So that's been sort of the most recent thing that I've been excited about. And I think the other thing in my teaching lately is I've gotten really comfortable with not knowing what the heck I know. Does that make sense?
Tell me more about that.
Teacher, you know, especially like being like Kathy's protege, I was like, I had to really prove myself and like, I know these things. And I really want to show people that I knew things. And now I'm much more comfortable sort of having someone come into the room and say, sort of trying to discover what it is about this person that they need and what will work for them. And I'm less afraid, because I used to be afraid that I wouldn't see their sort of issue or problem, so to speak, and help them. I'm a lot more confident that something will come up, so, like that I'll see something in their body and go, oh, you could use this. And let's, you know, like for lack of a better idea, like, oh, you could work on the arches of your feet. Let's work on the arches of your feet within the context of a, intermediate wonder chair workout. Does that make sense? Like, I'm getting a lot more comfortable, sort of not knowing what's going to happen in the session. Cause, you know, I used to have like these plans, like I want to get these things done. And now with that layered on top of working in this 3D plane and working with a physical therapist. And physical therapy is really interesting. They're much more science-based than Pilates teachers. And what I love about working with my friend Marshall is that he'll sort of do something and he'll go, huh, I think that worked. And he's very, you know, as much, and he'll work really hard to sort of see if it worked. And then he'll go, yeah, didn't work, and just throw it out. And I sort of love that, because I feel like so often I'm working in the Pilates studio and I feel like I'm always trying to get it right or perfect and have it be the exact right thing. And I think I've also gotten comfortable with being like, yeah, that was an okay exercise, but I think we can find something better. Does that make, so that's, I think, where I am these days. It's just like, yeah, I think I can make that better. Or, oh yeah, that really worked. And I think there's a freeing thing of sort of letting go of the idea of what you want to see or need to see. And sometimes you find a really interesting movement or an interesting image for someone when you go kind of let go of all those things of that you need to see or want to see, if that answers the question.
I find that fascinating. Do you have any thoughts on – well, it seems to me that a lot of people at the start of their career, particularly in the Pilates world, are drawn to this, like you say, this idea of it has to be perfect, and I want to, you know, demonstrate how I know the truth and the correct way.
And
that can be an amazing thing, because it drives people to actually practice and rehearse and get really good. And also it can be a double-edged sword, because it can close your mind off. And I wonder how much, you know, what are your thoughts on that process that you've undergone? Like, how much of that do you feel is just like the mellowing of age, or maybe it's the fact that you're now super comfortable and don't feel like you need to prove anything, or is it something else?
I think it's both of those things, by the way. I think it is me getting more comfortable as who I am as a teacher, and also mellowing. Like, I realized that I think there was this feeling that I had to prove my worth. Like, you know, being Kathy's protege or sort of big, you know, sort of longtime assistant came with this sort of weight of responsibility. And I wasn't sure if I was good enough. Does that make sense? Like, I just was like, God, I hope I'm good enough. And I think my eyes are just better these days than they used to be. You know, I can watch someone do something and I go, something's not, you know. And I wish I could say exactly what it is, but it may be a rhythm of the way they're moving or something that they're skipping. And already in my pocket, I have an idea of what can help them. So that's pretty exciting. But I think the biggest thing is sort of keeping it simple. When I don't try to bite off, like I don't need to do, I'm not trying to accomplish too much with each person. For instance, someone once asked me, well, like, what are you trying to do in a session? I said, really, flexion, extension, rotation, and side bending, and some strengthening in there. You know, and that usually happens within that. But that's kind of, if I can get all those three, those sort of four things happening in a session, I'm very happy. So I think that's the other thing, is taking that pressure off of needing to fit it all in.
That's great advice. And I think that's going to be very helpful for a lot of people, because the next question I was going to ask you, which you've anticipated, is like, do you feel there is any way to kind of shortcut that process? You know, could someone arrive at a place, you know, without taking 20 years to get there?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I think part of it is just, you know, you don't have to take 20 years to get here. Please, you know, be smarter about it. But I think, you know, so there's a, I feel like there's sort of, there's a teacher out there and I find it really interesting that, what I find really interesting is some people are like, wow, yeah, what am I teaching Pilates for? And I think that's what this teacher is really highlighting. And I find it fascinating that other teachers are like, yeah, what is my purpose in this method? And I sort of, and as an older teacher or more seasoned teacher, I sort of go, I mean, don't we all know what our purpose is as a Pilates teacher? We're just trying to get people moving and strong, right? Like, isn't that, or, you know, like it, like take a moment for their bodies, move their bodies, push them a little bit more than they maybe would have pushed them themselves, and in a safe environment. And I think if you can sort of just think of the, what it is in architecture, they say form over function, right? Is that, or is it the other way, function over form? I can't remember, but it's sort of that. It's like, you know, I want my clients to be able to sit down and get up from a toilet without hurting their knees. You know, if a client wants to have a better butt, great. Then let's help her get a better butt. You know, I want my client to be able to walk down a hallway and not be afraid they're going to fall. You know, it's really what we're doing is not rocket science. And if people can sort of maybe look at that sometimes as well, like, you know, our jobs are to sort of get them to move better and maybe feel better. And the feeling better usually happens just by sort of breathing a little bit and moving and feeling their bodies a little bit. So maybe that can help people realize that it doesn't have to take 20 years to get here. And yeah, please don't let it take 20 years.
Blossom, I think that's the perfect place to end, because I think that is just such a great little nugget. Well, not a little nugget. I think it's quite profound, actually. It's like, what we do is not rocket science. It's about getting people moving and you know, giving them the joy of and the use of their bodies back. And
yeah.
It doesn't have to be complicated. Just get them moving.
Yeah, and sometimes it's really like just shining a light. Like, hey, look, you just did that. Hey, look, you can, you know, and just being like, why don't you know, just pushing it just that little bit further than they think. It's not rocket science. But there is a, you know, we are sort of like the cheerleaders for these people, and that's the great part is to be able to see movement. Breathe, move, have some fun, for God's sakes. all too short. Life is all too short.
You're coming to Australia in August. It's now August, so you're coming very soon.
And so soon. I'm staring at suitcases right now.
So where, are those spots all sold out? Where can people find details about that?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Are those dates all sold out? And if not, where can people find details?
Actually, I think they just added on another day on like a Thursday. Former workshop on a Thursday, so I think there is room, and I think there's still room in some of my classes. I don't know that for sure, but the details will be if you go to Pilates on Tour AU, I think, or .au, or Pilates ITC should have some information about it, or HF Industries. If you look up all those hashtags,
well, and I'll link to that in the notes. We'll get the right address and link to it so people can find.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Blossom. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, and I know people will get a lot from it.